This is the Steve Cochran Show on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
This is a new theme for the show, which I like. It's funky like me. Live from the Allstate Showcase Studio. 6:10 in the morning. You got to be up at this hour. You might as well be yapping, running your mouth. That's the point of this. Much less music, much more talk. The Steve Cochran Show. About to enter edition number 842. Facebook is Steve Cochran Show. Twitter at Cochran Show. How's our MySpace page doing, Jake? We okay there? Probably down on followers, I'm guessing.
Tons of hits.
Oh, we have? Okay, great.
The posts are coming in like crazy. I can't keep up with them.
Politics today is going to take a little bit of a different line than normal. Pat Brady is on a beach somewhere wearing sunglasses so that nobody sees all the pretty girls he's looking at. By the way, that's the traditional guy trick. I think all women know that, right?
What?
Yeah, you wear the sunglasses so your girlfriend or your wife can't see that you're looking at everything on the beach.
I had no idea.
Do you do that with dudes, too?
Never. Oh. I never gawk. Okay, sometimes maybe.
Maybe once or twice. Eric Edelstein is on vacation as well. Didn't he just get back from Africa? What is Eric Edelstein doing now? Guy needs to work a little harder.
Yeah, he's skiing now.
All right. Well,
goes from the safari to the mountains.
Considering what we pay him, I don't think I should get real judgmental about him, should I? How dare he? Chuck Todd will be on later. Inexplicably, we're giving away Legoland tickets. Here's what I'm going to do with the Legoland tickets, because you can prepare your house now. I'm not going to give them to a grown-up. I'm going to give them to a kid.
Oh, cool.
Nice.
So if you have a kid that loves Legos and Legoland, I guess that's all kids, right? You have to make your kid come on the show with me.
That's a great idea.
Okay. Christine Redonio, the Senate, the Republican leader, will be on after 7. We'll see what she thought of the governor's budget address yesterday, which did not make a lot of news, but the words tax and hike both came up. Tim O'Brien, Trump biographer. Tim O'Brien will be on later. We like Tim a lot. Tim has been on the show, I don't know, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 times. And he's a regular guest. He's back. Rick Pearson on political news as well. And we'll wrap up the political hour with one of the great politicians of all time, Jamal Mayers. Oh, no, that's a Blackhawks thing.
Best dressed.
Yeah. Has he still got that clothing line going?
He looks. He always looks good.
Yeah,
good looking.
He is a sharp dresser.
Okay, settle down. Cold showers. Doc Emmerich speaking of the Blackhawks after 9 in the CLTV hour, and Orion Samuelson will be on. And we'll ask some retirement questions with Bill Geiger. So that's the way the show lays out. Let's do the top 6.
Now it's time to move on to a little something we call...
The Steve Cochran Show presents the top 6 at 6.
That's the best number I've heard yet.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5.
Yes.
6.
Lucky guess.
My favorite number is 6.
The top 6 at 6 on 720 WGN.
Donald Trump, you might be familiar with his work, the President of the United States, hosting Benjamin Netanyahu, Bibi Netanyahu, and their wives as well, getting together for an old friend's hoedown, and talking about the possibility of an Israeli-Palestinian peace agreement, which has been discussed since the time of Jesus.
Yeah.
So will anything be accomplished? It's hard to say. But I give President Trump credit for publicly stating yesterday, hey, chill on the settlements for a little bit. Because even though I am adamantly, vehemently pro-Israel, the settlements piece of this doesn't help. So this is just another thing on Trump's agenda that he's got to fix.
Did you think it got awkward when Netanyahu looked over to Jared Kushner and said, I've known you since you were a boy?
He was about to, yeah, he was, well, you know what, I give him credit for catching himself, right? Because he was going to go, I remember you when you were a little snot, came up to my knee.
Yeah.
You know, it's not what you're really going to hear with one of the chief advisors of the president.
Exactly.
But there was a lot of, mashugana going on between both families. I don't expect anything dramatic to come out of this, but it's the first time Netanyahu has had a chance to get together with Trump and throw some love at him. That was a good part of POTUS's day. The rest
part
of it, pretty much crap. The help wanted sign goes up for a labor secretary. So if you're looking for work, I don't know if it's been posted yet on any of the job sites. Is it on Indeed? Indeed.com is the labor secretary job up there? But he needs a labor secretary. His designee is a guy that he's a big deal in the fast food industry, right? Owned a bunch of Hardee's.
Became Puster?
The guy, yeah, the came together, ran Hardee's.
Fast food executive, yeah, Carl's Jr.
Yeah,
I think.
Hardee's,
yes.
Carl's Jr.
Right.
He also may or may not have abused his first wife. She appeared in disguise on Oprah back in the 80s and then walked back her claims and said she made him up for a free trip to Chicago. I don't know.
You know what? What was so horrible
about
that?
Somebody got paid off.
Remember watching those shows back in the day, and these women back then were coming forward in the 80s and saying, yes. You know, and she said, my husband's a public official, and they were so scared they were wearing these disguises.
Yeah.
I mean, that's horrible.
Well, yeah, it's absolutely horrible. He also had the problem where he didn't pay taxes on his household help.
Yes, who was allegedly illegal.
So there were just a bunch of Republicans that said, we're not voting for this guy. So now they need a new labor secretary designee. I guess I was hoping for more in the budget address yesterday when Governor Rauner spoke. But then again, I was thinking, what can he say? You know, it's coming up on 2 years without a budget in the state of Illinois. And if you're wondering if we need one, yeah, we do. Mayor Emanuel in particular came out hard against Governor Rauner yesterday and laid it all at his feet. The most awkward handshake, of course, is the Rauner-Madigan handshake that goes on. Right before he does a speech. And then Rauner had a good line, the governor did, when his teleprompter went down and he said, the speaker said the Russians did it.
Yeah, how about that?
Yeah.
It was a cute quip.
Yeah.
Awkward, but.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Next. Children have been murdered almost every day this week in the city of Chicago, and it's barely on anybody's radar. I mean, what have we come to?
It's three children dead within a four-day time span. There was also a 13-year-old girl killed in Hammond, Indiana. I know it's not Chicago, but
car
close
chase.
Enough. It was the car chase. I mean, again, little kids.
But if you focus on, and that's awful, obviously, but you focus on the violence that we talk about all the time, the gun violence, and another overnight shooting, this one on the Ryan, which apparently nobody was hit. When does it end? When does it end?
And really,
where's the outrage? Have we gotten past that point where there's no more outrage?
I think there's outrage, but I think now it's to a point, Steve, where do you begin?
Here's what's going to happen.
Where do you start?
Now, and I'm not this guy, but I firmly believe this to be true. Here's where it's going to change. A gangbanger is going to drive on the Eisenhower or the Kennedy and shoot at another car and miss the car and hit a white guy from the suburbs. And a white guy from the suburbs is going to crash. And then it's going to be major news. That's the comment on society. That's where we live now. I believe that's when the fire will start.
When it's someone who's not living in, say, Englewood or Austin or Garfield Park.
Yeah, and that's fair. It doesn't have to be a white guy.
Yeah.
It's going to be a mom or a dad or a woman going home from work or a husband, a man going home from work. It's going to be somebody from, the burbs in the city who gets shot by a gangbanger on the road. It occurred to me, too, that is there a law that specifically takes up the crime when you fire a gun from a car? Because if there's not, there should be.
That's a great question. Yeah, we should look into that.
Next. This probably doesn't help you getting out of the suspicion zone. North Korea, apparently, though this has not been confirmed, is trying to stop the autopsy of Kim Jong-un's big brother.
The one who was killed at the airport by
the
needle.
It would seem that you'd really want to know what happened. But apparently, they're trying to stop the autopsy. There's been three arrests in the case. One of the women that allegedly poisoned Kim Jong-nam had an LOL T-shirt on.
Yeah, I saw that
she was
surveillance
walking around.
Picture.
Very, very bizarre. Oh, and speaking of bizarre, the border wall's not quite finished yet, but one of the things they found on a scouting mission yesterday was a catapult to launch drugs over the border.
No.
So there's a section of the border between the United States and Mexico where there is a wall or some sort of, barricade, some sort of secure situation. in a catapult so you can throw drugs into the United States. And I don't know who's catching them on the other side. I don't know how far the catapult could fire. It's like a T-shirt gun at the United Center.
Right.
But they found a catapult yesterday, a drug catapult.
Oh, jeez.
So
where do you get a catapult?
Yeah.
Yeah, and where do you get one that can fire, say, bags of cocaine far enough so that the authorities can't catch you? News on the other side. You making a fair catch? I got it. We'll come back at 6:20. Nick will join us. We'll also get into the General Flynn fallout from yesterday and all of the obvious questions that need to be answered. Chuck Todd will join us at 6:40. Nick's next on some weekend movies, 6:21.
What to see, what's out at the show, I need to know the place and when. But there's one guy on Kian's Cochrane show, and what he says will make us stay or go. He is Nick at Night, DiGiulio. He knows what shows are good, what's stinking. He's the only one who's in the know. I need to know what Nick is thinking. I need to know what Nick.
Nick DiGiulio joins us now. Good morning, buddy.
Morning. I miss you.
Miss you as well. I'll never see you anymore. Never see you anymore.
Yeah.
It's ridiculous.
I didn't even get to talk to you last week either.
No, I know. I was in Disney wearing mouse ears.
Oh, good.
And by the way, a hot look for me. All right, so Fist Fight's coming out, and I got to tell you, that Ice Cube, ooh, what an actor. Ice Cube and who's the guy from?
Charlie Day.
I love Charlie Day. Ice Cube and Charlie Day, teachers and a fist fight. That's not a movie, is it?
Evidently. It's barely a premise. It's some stuff goes down in this school where the kids are basically out of control, and Ice Cube decides that he is not going to take it from the kids anymore, and goes after one kid with an axe, and then Charlie Day rats on him, and Ice Cube decides that they're going to fight after school 3:15 by the mailbox, you know, that kind of thing.
Right.
And then the whole rest of the movie is Charlie Day trying to either avoid it, get some help, or man up and have the fight with Ice Cube. Meanwhile, the whole school is going crazy. It hits social media, and it turns into this huge event where there's, like, tons of people in the schoolyard waiting for the fight. And there's a lot of funny people in this movie, including Tracy Morgan, which is one of the reasons why I'm kind of looking forward to it, because I think Charlie Day is very, very funny.
Feels like a paycheck movie, though, doesn't it?
Yeah, of course it does. And I think – I got a feeling it's going to make money. I really do. I watched as I'm wont to do on Monday night. I watched 3 hours of professional wrestling, and every commercial break was sponsored by Fist Fight. So
once again, hard to believe you're not married. all right, so we're cautiously optimistic about it.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of funny people in it, and I saw the trailer for it. A couple of different trailers for it. It seems like it could be kind of funny. And, you know, but there's, you know, I'm cautiously optimistic just simply because of the cast.
What's a cure for wellness?
A very weird, weird, weird movie about a businessman who goes off to the Swiss mountains to a wellness clinic to look for his boss in the Alps. And this wellness clinic is just really strange. Lots of weird stuff happening there. He begins to hallucinate. There are all kinds of weird people there. And he thinks that there's a conspiracy going on in this wellness center. It looks to me, and I haven't seen it, it looks to me like a weirder version of Shutter Island is what it looks like to me.
Hmm.
And the director of this movie is a guy named Gore Verbinski. And they've been advertising this film because it's really supposed to be very dark and twisted and gory and weird and surrealistic and full of fantasies and weirdness and stuff. But the way they've been advertising this movie cracks me up because they're advertising it from the visionary director, Gore Verbinski. Let me give you a couple of titles of this visionary director. He directed The Mexican with Brad Pitt and Julia Roberts.
Yeah, huh?
He directed The Pirates of the Caribbean. and he directed The Lone Ranger. He's a real visionary.
There's no question. That is cutting-edge stuff. The Mexican was so bad, they put a wall up around it. Which brings us to the Great Wall. What is that?
And you know what? We paid for it.
Yes, we did. At about $8.50 a head, I think, at that point.
You're right.
All right, the Great Wall, what is it?
So the Great Wall is this incredibly insane movie with Matt Damon, for some reason, in the lead. And it's about, hypothetically and in a fantasy way, about why the Great Wall of China was built. And it was built years and years and years and years ago to keep out crazy giant monsters.
Oh, please. What is Matt Damon doing?
I don't know. The director of this movie, though, this guy actually is a visionary. He's a director out of Hong Kong who has done some remarkable work in the past. But this movie seems so downright silly on every single level that I can't imagine it just being visually. I would imagine it's going to be amazing, and I'm assuming the special effects are going to be great too, because this director can really do that. But it just looks so stupid. And Matt Damon,
I love Matt Damon, but I don't understand why he'd do this.
Yeah, and that one comes out this week too, and it's already, you know, it was released overseas already. It's already made like $250 million overseas, so the money's been made back already. So
the only reason I go see it is if there was a drug catapult attached to the wall, the way there is on the wall on the U.S.-Mexican border fence. So we'll give you details on that story later. Hey, Nick's got his next film club screening, 25th anniversary of Reservoir Dogs, A Laugh Riot, at MovieCo Theater. In Rosemont, Tuesday, March 7th. This is a guaranteed sellout, isn't it?
Yeah, the tickets are going pretty good on this one. I mean, first of all, how old do you feel when you say 25th anniversary of Reservoir Dogs?
A lot.
This was the movie that obviously Quentin Tarantino burst onto the scene with. It's a great film. And if you've never seen it on the big screen because it was shot beautifully in scope, and to see it on the big screen in the theater that we're doing it in, it's going to be really special. And, it's a great movie. Reservoir Dogs on the big screen on Tuesday, March 7th. The tickets are available now. And you can reserve your seats now so that they're waiting for you at Fandango.com. It's only $10. Parking is free. Really easy to get to. And it's going to be a great night. And I haven't seen that movie on the big screen in probably 23 years. And so it's going to be a really, really good night. $10, parking free, Fandango.com.
You think Nick's good on this show? You ought to hear him between 2 and 5 a.m. Oh, buddy. Listen to the Nick Show and follow him all over social media as well. Hold on, dude. That's Nick DiGiulio. It's 6:32. We're going to come back, get your big story next.
This is the Steve Cochran Show.
General Flynn is a wonderful man. I think he's been treated very, very unfairly by the media. As I call it, the fake media in many cases. Papers are being leaked. Things are being leaked. And people are trying to cover up for a terrible loss that the Democrats had under Hillary Clinton. I think it's very, very unfair what's happened to General Flynn, the way he was treated, and the documents and papers that were illegally, I stress that, illegally leaked. Very, very unfair.
Mr. President, I have a follow-up. What the hell are you talking about? I've been watching that yesterday, and, well, my head exploded. And again, nobody wants to clean that up. Chuck Todd, Meet the Press, MTP Daily, and America's Only Hope for a Safe Future joins us now, live from, we assume, his home in D.C., or are you already on set?
I'm actually in my home in Arlington, if you want to know specific.
Well, I don't need the specific address till I come to town and need to stay with you.
Fair enough.
All right, so where is the... Where is the, as far as I'm concerned, the need for urgency in picking up the pace to get behind the why when it comes to Russia, when we have a spy ship off the coast of Connecticut and military actions going on and a discussion by the new Secretary of State that maybe includes a possibility of ground troops in northern Syria? The urgency to talk about all this stuff is there, but where's the urgency to get behind and figure out what's going on?
I think it's starting to increase, in fairness. I think Capitol Hill Republicans have been upset about this for a while behind the scenes, and I think that the Flynn ouster has – I mean, I hear what you're saying, but I would say, you know, the Flynn ouster just happened. You're starting to see now that sense of urgency You know, it's not there yet. Mitch McConnell won't agree to a special select committee yet, which I think is really what's needed. And if Donald Trump wants to save his presidency, credibility-wise, I actually think the White House should embrace something like this. Because right now, they're acting like a team of people that has something to hide. And the more the president says things like he did yesterday in that bizarre rant about Mike Flynn, if he's so innocent, why'd you fire him?
Right.
He is only, I think, risking more disclosures because it really looks like to me like somebody fearful of the truth.
Well, and specific to what you said, too, the Senate, the Senate Republicans are in. The House Republicans, Jason Chaffetz turned out to be a coward. But the House Republicans are running in the other direction. Now, there's different re-election concerns here, obviously.
That's exactly right. I mean, you know, you're basically, your House Republicans are your Trump people, and your Senate Republicans were the non-Trump people. And that was almost the way it broke out. You know, and in many ways, many of the House Republicans do represent more Trump voters than many of the Senate Republicans. So it actually makes a little bit of sense.
But at some point, the House Republicans could be put in a position where they have to step up. Does that mean Paul Ryan has the worst job in America when that happens?
Yes. Look, I've always thought Paul Ryan, if you believe that Paul Ryan, you know, I know there's some people that are like, oh, Paul Ryan doesn't stand up enough to Trump, this or that. For him to have credibility when he does split from Trump on something, he needs to be seen as an ally, particularly by that House conference. You know, there's a good 100 of them that want to see that, if he is going to be able to move them together. So, you know, that's how I watch Ryan. You know, and until, I mean, he's the guy in the House that would break away. I still think McConnell's the person that will sort of dictate the mood of Washington Republicans. When he breaks from Trump, I mean, it's over. Because McConnell is one of those just cold, calculating, and he just looks at the numbers. And he'll determine getting rid of Trump is the only way to save the Senate Republicans. That's what he'll do.
The question that was first heard loudly and clearly, you know, for people of my age with Nixon and Watergate when I was a little kid, what did he know and when overrides this? But the thing I'm fascinated by is motive, because I think if you get to motive and you can figure out motive, you got the domino that makes all the other dominoes fall. You know, was General Flynn just being overzealous, or was he asked to make the call? And the obvious question on motive is why? Is the president of the United States refusing to take any sort of positive action and even discussing all the negative things Russia's doing around the world?
Look, there's a third possibility, and Flynn was the corrupt one. Flynn had the insider relations with the Russians, and he was manipulating the president. I mean, that is a third option. What I'm saying is you presented two. There is a third that maybe Trump was duped by Flynn. You know, you can't make that a scenario that isn't plausible either. But you're right. Like we just haven't connected the dots, and this is my frustration. And I've been reporting the story and even watching it as others. I think even the FBI, I think some of these leaks could be coming out right now because the FBI is stuck too. You know, they've got a circumstantial case, but they don't have the smoking gun yet. They don't have the connector from Russian to the WikiLeaks to the Trump campaign, right? They're close. It's almost there. They have the Trump campaign to WikiLeaks with Roger Stone. He's all but admitted that. But they don't have that connection to the Russian government. And I think if they had it, we'd know it.
Right. Well, certainly you guys
and it's
would.
Not quite there yet. And, you know, look, you know, and that Flynn may be an important player in all this. Flynn also, that could be the motivation for Donald Trump praising Flynn yesterday.
Right.
Maybe he doesn't want Flynn to flip on him.
Right. I totally agree.
So Congress holds hearings. They investigate everything. What is the point of not investigating Flynn, especially when Jason Chaffetz is saying, you know what, this has been handled. That can't make anyone look good.
You were.
Well, the Senate Intelligence Committee is doing a real investigation, and Flynn is going to be a part of it. My issue with this Senate Intel probe is that it's done behind closed doors. I think it is important for the public to see more of this investigation than not, which is why it could end up, it should be in a more public forum. Oh, House Oversight would be a more public forum. I'm trying to figure out, look, if you're House Oversight, they investigated Benghazi. Why didn't they, you know, they could investigate, you know, so you can't sit here and you could argue, was Benghazi in their purview? Well, there's chairman of oversight that believes everything's in their purview.
Right.
You know, from steroids to in baseball to messed up raids, counterintelligence raids in Yemen. So, you know, I think it's pretty clear. Chaffetz doesn't want to investigate his own president yet.
And Rand Paul said, don't investigate the Republicans. We got too much work to do. That's not good. MTP Daily, every day on MSNBC, and, of course, Meet the Press on Sunday. You want to plug anybody?
I believe I can plug. I'll be speaking to John McCain this weekend from Germany at the Munich Security Conference.
Good.
We'll be talking a lot of Russia.
The senator at some point seems like he's just going to snap. I don't know. And if he does, I hope he does it for you. It's Chuck Todd. Thank you, man. I appreciate it.
All right, guys. Thanks,
dude. See you later. McCain, to me, is the key to all this. McCain and Lindsey Graham.
I completely agree. I completely agree.
Because they can get my good friend Mitch McConnell to move. And they'll take a step back and let McConnell take credit for it if it goes that way.
Can they? Do you think they can turn McConnell?
Yeah. I think McCain can get whatever he wants. At this point in his life, to be sure. Traffic. Mary, we're going to do traffic here. And I need a parent to call me who wants Legoland tickets for their kids. But I don't want to talk to you. I want to talk to your kid.
What if they disguise their voice?
Hi, it's a kid.
Yeah, they could.
Hi, I'm not my mom. We need a parent, well, a grandparent even, you know, because I'm one of those now. So yeah, get your kid on the phone with me if they really want Legoland tickets. And if they can convince me, I'll give them those Legoland tickets.
Yeah, that won't be hard.
Oh, I'm a rock.
This is the Steve Cochran Show.
What is there left to want? I get to go to Legoland. Say it.
Batman. Lego Batman the movie. We got 4 tickets to Legoland Discovery Center in Chicago to celebrate the release of the Lego Batman movie. Lego Discovery Center features the exclusive Lego Batman movie days going on February 18th through the 20th. That's this weekend, right? And the 18th Friday? Tomorrow?
Saturday.
Saturday.
Oh, Saturday. So Saturday, Sunday, Monday, and 25th through the 26th. Scavenger hunts, Batmobile, gadget building workshops, meet and greets, and Lego Batman will be there. Get discount rate tickets in advance at LegolandDiscoveryCenter.com/Chicago. Let me go to the phone and see if we can get ourselves a winner. Hello?
Hello.
What is your name?
Ricky.
Ricky, how old are you?
5.
Do you have any ID?
What's ID?
Oh, all right, so Ricky, you love Legos?
Lego City.
And what do you build?
It's like the playing city, but it's not that big. I mean, it's not Lego City. It's just, yeah.
Pipe down, Dad. I'm talking to Ricky.
Sorry.
So, Ricky, what's the coolest thing you've ever built?
My Lego like city thing.
Yeah, so like buildings and stuff?
Yeah, like buildings. That's really cool.
Do you make Lego guys too to live in the buildings?
I make lots of Lego guys. Yeah. Like tons.
Do you give them names?
No.
You should give one a name and you should call it Steve because that's my name.
Okay.
Yeah, well, I appreciate it. I'm going to give you these tickets because you're a hard negotiator. You're a big winner. All right, so you're going to go see Lego Batman. How cool is that?
Cool.
All right, take your dad. He seems like a nice guy.
It's like a Lego City neighborhood, but it's like a giant neighborhood.
I'd like to live there at some...
The Steve Cochran Show.
It's why we've been working for 2 years to pass a truly balanced budget. Today...
we finally all agree that economic reforms must be part of a balanced budget solution. That is great news. A good deal for taxpayers lays the foundation for balanced budgets for years to come. The budget must truly balance by the end of fiscal year 2018. And it must balance in a way that doesn't send us right back into deficit a few years from now. Now is the time to seize the moment.
Governor Rauner's budget address yesterday in Springfield didn't make a lot of news. Of course, it's hard to break through on the news cycle now because so much of it is POTUS. But the Senate Republican leader, Christine Redonio, who has been working, at least my understanding, good morning to you. Can I call you Christine? I always feel, you know, awkward giving you the
title. Absolutely, absolutely.
It's always clumsy, you know. But at any rate, you, and correct me if I'm wrong, have been working closely with Senate Majority Leader Cullerton to try to figure all this out. So where are we?
Well, we have been. Actually, we've been working on it since the beginning of December. And both of us share the governor's frustration that the state has not had a budget for 2 years. It is really a problem every day that we don't have a budget. People need to understand that the hole digs deeper by $11 million a day.
Yeah, it's like throwing $11 million out the window every day. We don't get any. We don't get anything for it. We just throw it away.
No, we don't. We don't. So that's why there's certainly an urgency here. So I was actually pleased with the governor's speech yesterday, because since we have been working on this, he has given us some advice as to things that could bring him on board, get him to sign this. So hopefully when we get back from our break, the Senate will vote on our proposal and we will send it over to the House where, you know, they can work a little more on it, get it signed, and our state will be back on the right track.
We trace the call. It goes to the House. This is where the horror movie starts for me, because my favorite guy, Mike Madigan, I'm concerned, will take whatever work that you've done in the Senate and stop it. How, do we know that he's remotely on board here?
Well, here's the dynamic that I think has changed a little bit. There is a bipartisan agreement at this point that we do need to include reforms and you know, some good government things if we're going to ask the taxpayers for any more money. We cannot cut our way out of this budget. We cannot just have growth only. We're going to probably have to look at revenue. But now Republicans realize we may need revenue. Democrats realize we need to have some solid reforms if we have to go back to the taxpayer. That work has been done. Madigan's under tremendous pressure. He's got members in his caucus whose constituencies are suffering, too, because of we don't have a budget. So I think he's going to be under a lot of pressure to move something forward that can get signed into law and again, put our state back where it needs to be.
I think the taxpayers are just completely frustrated with the entire process and with both parties, you know, speaking as a taxpayer. Why immediately does it go to income tax hike, property tax? Like, I know Rauner wanted a property tax freeze, but that would mean raising income taxes. Why does it always have to go to that?
Well, you are absolutely right about that. Taxpayers are furious, and they don't want their taxes raised. I mean, I get a lot of calls on that, and I am very, very sensitive to that. But the problem is so deep right now that there's no way we can cut our way out. Although, even in the plan that we are talking about in the Senate, there are significant cuts and significant breaks on how much spending can go up. So we realize the sentiment of the taxpayer. The problem is much of the tax increase is going to have to pay off old bills. And we, as all the residents in Illinois, have a big stack of unpaid bills, and we are on the hook for them. And that's just a fact. We cannot walk away from our obligations. There is no bankruptcy for states. Those things have to be paid off. Now, it is my hope, and I think the governor expressed it as well, that once we get those bills paid off, perhaps there can be some additional relief for taxpayers. But you're right. They are furious with what's going on.
Yeah, and the thing, and Andre, I think you've heard this as well from people, is why would we send you guys more money? You don't know how to spend it.
Well, and I think, you know, that's a fair criticism if you look at the last 10 years. And again, not pointing fingers, but the fact of the matter is, if you live in Illinois, you owe that money to vendors. I mean, the state has made contracts, they've purchased things, and those bills must be paid. So we've got to take care of that before we can move forward and start to grow the economy and, you know, hopefully lower some of those taxes.
Yeah, you know, I equate
this. Remember, too, the reforms that are in here should hopefully spur business development, allow the local municipalities and school districts to be a little more efficient with the money they do have and lower property taxes. And there will be some form of a freeze in this package, property taxes.
Does everybody understand how serious this is? And I don't mean everybody walking by the Showcase studio this morning, but the people in Springfield, do they get it? Do they understand how serious this is, the members? Because I'd love to be convinced that they do.
Well, that's a really good point, because I think until now, some of them have not. And that's what's so tough about this, because I think in many instances, the general public doesn't understand it, and that's why they're so angry. All they see is money going out of their pocket. But we have bills that absolutely have to be paid. There's no way around it. But again, what they need to look at is, if we ask them for more money, there will be some property tax freeze. There will be some other reforms to help business growth. So if you don't have a job, hopefully you get a job or you can move up. And we need to create more jobs in this state, and that is included in the package.
Christine, last fall, Leslie Munger halted lawmakers' salaries. Susana Mendoza said she would do the same thing. Lisa Madigan saying that she's going to stop paying, the social service agencies should stop, they should stop being paid as well. Is any of this lighting a fire under lawmakers in Springfield?
Well, you know, obviously not being paid has different impacts on different particular lawmakers, but certainly people are aware of that. To me, though, the thing that really was unbelievable is yesterday we received word from our office supply company for the Senate telling us they will no longer send us paper.
Wow.
You know, no paper.
I mean, you have to laugh because that's how ridiculous it is.
Right.
The fifth largest state in the union, the state of Abraham Lincoln, may not have paper in the state government
because
we can't pay our bills. Good God. Ridiculous.
Exactly. I mean, these businesses are not charities. They can't just give us things for free.
They're 1,000% right. Bills. They shouldn't send you paper.
No, I totally agree.
No paper.
So those kinds of things make it very, very real, as ridiculous as that sounds.
All right. So what's the next step and how fast can it happen?
Well, the next step is we've heard the governor's advice. I will be speaking with the Senate president and he'll speak with his caucus about things that we might be able to take from the governor's speech and incorporate into our program so that it's something he could sign. I'm hoping that we will be able to vote on this on February 28th when the Senate comes back. The urgency here is critical. We have to get this moving. If we don't get this moving by the 28th, we may as well just go home. And then at that point, Mike Madigan can figure out what he's going to do.
I would advocate
this is the only game in town.
I would advocate you all leave Madigan there, turn the lights off, and see what happens. And by the way, say hi and thank you to Senator Cullerton and to Representative Durkin as well, and say hi to Mike Madigan for me because you know it's funny he doesn't get back to me.
Well, I don't get to talk with him a lot either, but I'll certainly tell the Senate President and the House Republican Leader hello.
Great would it be if you said hi to Madigan for me? Go what? thank you. I appreciate it. And please push this forward as fast as you can. Please. Please.
I definitely will. The 28th. That's what we're looking at.
All right. Thanks,
Christine.
Thank you.
Be funny if Madigan said to say hi back to you.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
That would be funny.
In what parallel universe? Breaking news. Christine Redonio just told us the state legislators can't get paper for the government anymore. So here's what we're going to do, and I will start this this morning. I'm going to send, and this is an idea from a listener, a 224 texter, let's send all of our legislators one sheet of paper. So I'm going to send a piece of paper, and I would encourage the rest of you to do this as well, to your representative, as Rick Pearson joins us now, finest political writer in America. And Rick, on one side, I'm going to write, do your job, pass a budget. And on the other side, I'm going to leave it blank so they can use it at work.
Maybe we have too much paper around around Springfield. Maybe we need more action.
That's a real symbol, though, isn't it?
We can't
pay our staples bill. Mm-hmm. We can't pay our vendors for paper.
Well, the bill backlog is $11 billion in
right.
the state. And some of these small businesses and vendors, I mean, they're waiting more than 2 years to get paid on their bills.
What would happen if we went to an all-volunteer legislature?
There wouldn't be a legislature.
I think there'd be a lot of people in Illinois that said, no, I'll do it. I'll go down. I'll fix it.
Yeah, but first you'd still have to run the campaign to decide who goes in and how many people want to volunteer to run for office these days.
All right, so you heard the governor's address yesterday. Where are we?
Basically, where we were before the governor's address. I mean, the governor did offer bits of parameters that he would accept in this so-called grand bargain that the Senate Republicans and Democrats are working on. But that having been said, the political obstacles, the political hurdles are just overwhelming. And, you know, this, as we heard Leader Redonio say, you know, we need to vote on this by February 28th. The original plan was to vote for something before the end of January. Then it was to vote for something the first week of February. The fact of the matter is this is still very much a moving target. And there's a lot of concerns from members of Leader Redonio's caucus that the changes to assist business that are being talked about right now, they aren't sufficient enough for Republican votes in exchange for the kind of tax increases that are going to be needed to try to put together a balanced budget.
Yeah, because it's a bet, right? And the bet is that we're going to create an economic environment where people are going to dive back in and do business. But I think I brought this up to you off the air years ago, but I would love to see a mathematical calculation of what the average family of four in Illinois is going to get hit with the tax increase that's being proposed versus what sort of money they're going to be out of in 6 months or a year if we continue to roll with no budget. You know, real impact stuff. It's got to be calculable, isn't it?
It is and it isn't, because we don't know. There are certain things that we don't know. For example, the governor in his budget message presented, and while he talks about presenting balanced budgets, there's a hole in it ranging from $4.5 billion to $7.2 billion. And we don't know how that hole gets really filled. We don't know if Lisa Madigan is going to be successful. Today she is in court down in St. Clair County arguing that the judge lift the order that state employees be paid. So we don't know what the effects of that are going to be. We still don't have a contract agreement with the state's largest public employees union. I mean, everything still is very much a moving target, and it's going to be, you're right, it's either pay now or pay later, and every day that the state doesn't take action, it's another $11 million kind of going into the red ink. We're really, really getting to a point of no return.
And also, too, Rick, this doesn't even take into account the pension cost, which could grow by $1 billion, he said, in the next year alone. I found it strange that he said he would let certain workers choose to give up some of their cost of living increases or accept limits on how their salaries will go up and affect their benefits, obviously. You know, the option of doing that seemed odd to me, especially when we're in kind of this D-Day scenario.
Well, this is the option that's on the table, and it's a plan offered by Senate President Cullerton that he believes is constitutional, over trading off future pay increases for getting your current 3% increase in pension costs. No doubt pension costs are eating up more and more of the disposable money that the state has to use for education and social services, but we know what the courts have previously ruled regarding pensions. Senate President Cullerton maintains his plan is constitutional, but you can be sure that will be immediately challenged in court. So that plan would save roughly $1 billion a year, but at the same time, there are a series of questions about whether it truly is constitutional or not.
Is there a reason to be optimistic they'll come to some agreement that'll pass both the Senate and the House?
I have to say, I'm always the naysayer. I mean, prevailing wisdom is always bet against anything happening in Springfield until some kind of calamity takes place. And I'm not sure that the Senate paper vendor canceling the contract is enough of a calamity. I mean, it's so ridiculous that it's a good thing when Republicans and Democrats are talking, but that's on one chamber. The obstacles of that package, we still don't know if the Senate can come up with the votes to pass something. If they do, we don't know if it's enough to satisfy Governor Rauner. If they do, we don't know what's going to happen in the House. And if you're voting for an income tax increase and you don't know where the governor stands, you don't know where House Speaker Madigan stands, you could cast that politically risky vote and then just be left hanging out in the wind.
The obvious answer to that is we don't care if it's politically risky. Do your job. But I don't know that the people who care that it's politically risky care about the people they represent. They certainly would need to convince us at this point.
Well, you also have the fact that the way our politics is in Springfield, that it's political risk is associated with where does your leader stand, because for the Republicans, it's where does the governor stand. If you're Democrats in the House, where does Speaker Madigan stand? Because that's where your money comes from for reelection.
And Speaker Madigan has been very strong and very out there on where he stands on this. Oh, wait, we haven't heard a word.
That's true. And I think, quite frankly, that reflects doubts that this package from the Senate will even be able to pass.
Wasn't there a time back in Lincoln's days where they all got locked in a room till they came up with an answer?
You know, it wasn't just in Lincoln's day. I mean, I remember the days when I would tell people coming off a presidential campaign that I'm going back to cover Illinois government, which is a bit more saner than Washington, D.C.
Not anymore.
Now it's the same thing.
There's a whole scene in Hamilton just on that where they all get locked in the room until something gets done.
Yeah. There's also a scene where a duel takes place.
Exactly right.
Rick Pearson, plug your show.
We've got the Sunday Spin coming up from 7 to 9 a.m. on Sunday. Obviously, we're going to talk about the governor's budget address and their reaction to that, as well as the ever-moving situation in Washington, including on Saturday, we're going to see the first campaign trip of 2020, Donald Trump in Florida.
Yep.
Yeah.
Because that's going to fix things. The toilet paper vendor not delivering, according to a texter, that's going to get things moving.
I was going to suggest that might be the key there. Yeah.
That'd be the one. All right. Thanks, man. That's our friend Rick Pearson, and no better political writer anywhere. All right. Stand by. Tim O'Brien, Trump biographer, coming up. We'll get through your big story next on 720 WGN.
This is the Steve Cochran Show.
And I wonder, what do you say to those among the Jewish community in the States and in Israel and maybe around the world who believe and feel that your administration is playing with xenophobia and maybe racist tones? Thank you.
Well, I just want to say that we are, you know, very honored by the victory that we had, 306 electoral college votes. We were not supposed to crack 220. You know that, right? I think one of the reasons I won the election is we have a very, very divided nation. Very divided. And hopefully I'll be able to do something about that.
Thank you for answering my question on xenophobia and anti-Semitic behavior. The guy that asked the question just started crying and left the room. Tim O'Brien is one of my favorite people to talk to in the age of Trump. Trump Nation, The Art of Being the Donald. Somebody that knew Donald before we did and knows him better than anybody. And frankly, the only guy I've heard to be consistent in message throughout that we're in trouble long before he was even a serious candidate. Tim, nice to have you on again. How are you?
Mr. Cochran, it's always good to be here.
Did you catch that particular exchange yesterday?
I just heard it on the lead-in. I think I might have caught the very end of it about the divided nation and is the
yeah. The question was about anti-Semitic behavior, and his answer was, "We had a great victory."
Oh, so I didn't hear the front end of that, right? Well, you know, you've got to give him credit. He's very good at changing topics. This morning he was tweeting that the whole problem in Washington right now is leaks, and we'll get to the bottom of this and find out who the leakers are. And I think it's interesting how, I mean, he's very skillful at changing the discussion, because there obviously is an issue if classified intelligence information is getting leaked willy-nilly. But the core problem isn't the leaking. The leaking is a problematic response to the core problem. And the core problem is that he's not effectively managing the federal government. And it's not just the intelligence community that's leaking. It's also members, his own White House aides are leaking transcripts of his calls to people like the, you know, the Australian Prime Minister.
Yeah, you're talking about five people in the room in a food chain of maybe a couple, three others that have access to that transcript, and somebody is leaking from that team. But you're the guy who told me forever ago that the ADD problem with Donald Trump is legendary. To me, that's always stuck in my head. And to me, this management by chaos thing is directly related to that, because he can't focus enough to tell people what to do and when to do it.
And I think in addition to that, I don't think he has the intellectual and emotional discipline to build strong teams and listen to quality people who might be around him. Remember, he has Rex Tillerson in his administration. Rex Tillerson ran Exxon, arguably the most complex global corporate enterprise there is, ran it to great effect. He's sitting there in this administration. He knows how to run a bureaucracy. Thus far, it doesn't appear Trump is tapping into him. General Jim Mattis, a senior military official with vast experience running the military bureaucracy, Trump is not tapping into him. Instead, he's going into these relatively inexperienced people like his son-in-law, Jared Kushner, who's wildly inexperienced, and Steve Bannon, who's a flamethrower. And you get the sensibility around how the White House is being run. It's a bunch of people on pogo sticks bouncing around in the Oval Office, and that's a troubling thing.
Tim, I think I'm just confused by the hypocrisy, because last year, especially in October during that the rally in Pennsylvania, I love WikiLeaks. I think back to back, he said how much he loves WikiLeaks.
I love WikiLeaks,
but now the leaks are bad things, very bad things, and of course the media taking the brunt of that as well. Does Trump does he want advisors, people to give him their honest opinion, or does he just want yes men?
Oh, he just wants yes men. And that's really always historically narrowed down to family members. He really only trusts close family members. And that's why in this White House, Jared Kushner and Ivanka Trump are easily the two most powerful advisors, regardless of what anyone else says. And we've taken to calling them Javanka, a shorthand for Jared and Ivanka.
Which, by the way, is a great coffee if you haven't tried it as well. We're talking to Tim O'Brien. I've always believed, and I'd be curious to see if you share this or not, that he wanted to win. He never wanted the job. And if that's the case, he must be miserable. Am I close?
I think it's always risky to get inside someone's head that deeply, but I wouldn't disagree with a single thing you said. I think this wasn't the first time he ran for the presidency. He's done it several times before. I think he approached them as marketing exercises and free publicity. He never developed fully fleshed out policy plans, even on the things that are the hallmarks of what he wants to bring to the country. Immigration reform, replacing Obamacare, the wall with Mexico, and a tax cut. He still hasn't put just policy clothing on those things. And to me, this isn't at the core here. This isn't really about ideology or left or right or partisan battles at the end of the day. It first and foremost, it's just about competent management of government and delivering on campaign promises. And he doesn't have the team and structure in place to do that effectively. And that should not surprise anybody. He's a 70-year-old man, and he's been doing it this way for about 45 years.
Tim O'Brien wrote the book Trump Nation, The Art of Being the Donald, and spent a lot of time with Donald Trump. And he knows him much better than anybody else, including me, ever will. I got to leave with Russia. Russia, what is the motive? What is, you know, why not go full 24 in the old 24 with Kiefer Sutherland with this? He borrowed a bunch of money in the 90s from Russian oligarchs, and they've got him under his thumb. Why isn't that as realistic as anything else we've heard?
I personally think the financial stuff, I don't think the media has handled that topic fairly on Trump. You know, he actually didn't build much in Russia. I don't think he's had strong financial relationships there. I think the real story is a diplomatic compromise. I think that he clearly opened a door to Putin feeling like the Kremlin could intervene in a U.S. election, which would trouble everyone, regardless, again, of party or ideology. He invited them to hack Hillary Clinton's email accounts openly in a news briefing. That's an extraordinary thing for someone to do who's aspiring to be president. And I think that he he's not sophisticated on foreign policy. He doesn't have any experience in negotiating with complex diplomatic issues. And I think he admires Vladimir Putin because Putin is a thug. Trump admires bravado and sort of street smart thuggery. And I think he thought it was great that Putin rolled into the Crimea, without having any sense of the geopolitical consequences of that or what it means for the Baltic states in Eastern Europe if NATO pulls back and what that opens up to Putin. So he's created a Pandora's box around Putin that he began sowing during the election, and now all of this is coming home. And this isn't the media and leaks. This is Donald Trump's own mistakes, and he better course correct.
It's Tim O'Brien, and he's a great follow on Twitter, by the way, O-B-R-I-E-N, amongst other places. You should read everything he writes, and I'll let you go. But is he still in office in a year?
You know, I profoundly believe the notion that, you know, we should get him impeached and he'll be gone in a year. I think I just don't think I see that happening that quickly. And I think what people should hope for is that some adults get into the room and we just get effective, mature management of the country. We're not on display very well right now for the world around us.
Yeah, especially when we're talking about maybe putting boots on the ground in northern Syria is one of the options, and people will die. It doesn't get any more serious. Tim, thank you as always.
Thank you for having me.
That's Tim O'Brien. He's a great guest. And, you know, none of it's hyperbole. He knows him. Spent in the room with him hours and hours and hours and hours and hours.
Here come the Hawks, the mighty Hawks.
Hawks back home, finally. A couple more days. They play Saturday night. Edmonton will be here, and Jamal Mayers will be at the auto show later today. Well, first off, it'd be good to have the boys back in town, right, Jamal?
Absolutely. It seems like they've been gone forever, so it'll be good to get hockey started back up again. I'm sure the guys are re-energized to get going.
You go to the Chicago Auto Show, as you should, and you're going to see that great Chevy lineup. You might even see a nice blue Chevy Impala, like the one I drive.
Absolutely.
The Chevy Dealers Family Fun Zone today from 4 to 6. You can meet Jamal Mayers. What are you going to be wearing? Andrea wanted to know.
Well, because he always dresses so nicely. He's always a snappy dresser.
You pick out your own clothes, or you got somebody in the house that picks them out for you?
I actually have a relationship with a local company in Chicago that does a great job called Not Standard, K-N-O-T Standard. And Molly Cross there helps me out and gets me all suited up.
It's such a coincidence because I have a relationship, and Jake, you do as well. I have a relationship with a company out of Wisconsin. It's spelled Kohl's, K-O-H-L-S. It's a little different than Jamal's lineup. All right, so how you feel as the boys get into this stretch run here? How you feeling?
I feel good. I'm encouraged by the play of the young guys, and I'm talking about, you know, obviously Hartman and Hinostroza and alike, and obviously the concern going in was, you know, can we find a winger? Who's going to be the winger with Jonathan Toews? And I think Richard Panik has shown that the first 10 games of the season and then the last dozen of games here, he brings a physical element that this team kind of lacks as well. And he has the finish to be able to contribute offensively. So I think the back end is as good as it's been in a lot of years since Johnny Oduya left. I wouldn't be surprised, as Stan's mentioned, that he doesn't look to be very active at this deadline.
It's kind of hard to figure out how teams are going to react to the deadline, isn't it, this year? I mean, it seems like there are a lot of teams that are kind of on the brink, Jamal, of being right there contending for a playoff spot and maybe a little unwilling to pull the trigger because they just don't know. They could maybe still be in it with the guys they have.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And I think that, you know, the fact that you have that extra point, you don't have an extra point. You basically have teams that there's kind of like a manufactured parity in the sense that it's kind of what Stan has talked about. And you have teams that, you know, assume they're still in it because they're only 5 or 6 points back. But let's not forget they have to leapfrog 5 or 6 teams just to get to that 8th spot. So it's created parity, but it's also created a sense of a possibility, which kind of handcuffs teams to move forward and plan for next year because it's tough to tell their fans that, you know, we're going to pull the chute. We're going to kind of sell off our guys that are aging and veterans and kind of plan for next year when conceivably they look like they're 4 or 5 points out of the race.
You can meet Jamal Mayers today in the Chevy Family Fun Zone from 4 to 6. Tomorrow, Adam Burrish will be there from 4 to 6. Watch your wallet when Burrish is there. Dennis Savard, Savvy on Saturday, 4 to 6. Daniel Carcillo on Sunday, 4 to 6. And one of the all-time great Blackhawks, Dan Hampton, will be there on Monday from 4 to 6. Details at ChevyDriveChicago.com. Jamal, thanks, man. Have fun at Chevy.
I appreciate it. And let's not forget, Chevy was the first sponsor that came back on board in 07. So they had the guts to get on board at the infancy of what's going on. And
yep.
You have to give them credit for that.
And Mike Hillstrom, he's a genius.
Absolutely.
All right, buddy, thanks. We'll come back with the news next. Dean on the way, too, on 720 WGN.
Ladies and gentlemen.
Dean Richards joins us from Channel 9.
Citizens of the world.
Some of the world's greatest entertainers are here tonight.
Ladies and gentlemen, may I present to you.
And tonight, guess what? It's going to be Dean.
Yeah, honey, you know I love you more than what I should. Kiss me,
9 o'clock, we join CLTV live.
We're all choked up about that.
Glad that wasn't live. And, of course, from next door at Channel 9, next door to CLTV, you have Dean Richards and all the other people he lets appear on his morning show.
On my morning show?
Yes, yeah. You know, Larry and Robin and all the other people you employ.
Oh, I'm not taking credit for this.
I wouldn't either if I were you. I know we're going to talk movies that are coming out tomorrow.
Correct.
But is there anything today, movie-wise, that we should be excited about? Something like maybe a sequel to a famous movie about love?
No.
Oh, okay. All right.
Turns out, wait a minute, Steve, this just in. Turns, you know, the movie Love Actually.
I think it's a terrific movie. I always like it.
It's my favorite movie.
Love that movie.
It is
the
one
trouble
of,
with love.
Oh, is there going to be a sequel?
There is going to be a sequel.
Yes! Oh, cool.
And all the originals are back except for the people that are dead.
Well, and one other who's not dead, but.
Not Hugh Grant.
No. Well, first of all, it's not going to be a full-length motion picture this time. It's going to be a television version, which is going to be part of this comic relief charity event that they do in Britain. It'll be on in Britain on March 24th and here in the U.S. May 25th on NBC. But it's going to be an update. It's like what all your favorite characters from Love Actually are doing now.
They're all older.
And Hugh Grant is expected to be back.
How about Liam Neeson?
Yes. Liam Neeson is expected to be back. Keira Knightley, Colin Firth, Rowan Atkinson.
Who was the old guy we were supposed to believe was the rock and roll singer?
That was Bill Nighy.
Yeah.
Bill Nighy is expected to be back in it.
Wow, how old is he?
Oh, Bill Nighy, the science guy?
Not Bill Nighy, the science guy.
Yeah, different one.
The only worry, though, is Love Actually was so good. Do you think, Dean, that they can... do a part two?
Yeah, what about the kids that were in it?
They're updating.
The kids are going to be in.
Yeah, they're updating it. Like Liam Neeson's daughter gets taken by some terrorists.
No, he had a son.
Oh, sorry. Yeah, here you go. Crank this up. Crank it up. Yeah, music of my people.
It doesn't care how fast you fall.
Right now I'm standing in front of the window holding up signs to Steve saying, to me, you are perfect.
That's all.
I've always loved you.
I love this song. Kelly Clarkson ate a black girl. That's all she sings. She gets to these notes.
Dean, one of your cards just blew away.
Story of my life.
Anyway, it's a great movie, so I hope they don't screw it up. It feels to me like a trial balloon. Kind of like the reboot of Will and Grace.
I think that's sort of what they're doing here a little bit, trying it out on television.
Yeah.
Because the one thing you don't want to do is screw up a sequel to this.
Yeah.
So I think they're trying it out as a TV show, see how it works. Alan Rickman, of course, is the one who died last year.
He can't be in the sequel.
He is not available to be in the movie this year.
No.
And Emma Thompson, who played his wife, currently is not attached to
this. Oh, come on. She's great.
Project.
We love her.
Yeah.
I would like to see her in it, you know, remarried or, you know, widow. Or
right. I enjoy Emma Thompson and everything she does, but I can only watch like a third of it because the other two thirds are period pieces mm-hmm. with flowing gowns.
Right.
And tight corsets.
Yes.
I was in a band called The Tight Corsets.
Yeah. Are the porn stars still in it?
What?
The porn stars.
I believe, remember the ones who were the stand-ins for the porn stars?
Yeah.
Why do I not remember the porn stars?
The two average-looking people.
The quiet couple.
They were like two average-looking people who were stand-ins.
Very awkward. At the end.
That's the one part of the movie I didn't care for. Mm. I didn't think it would really, really needed.
I thought they were kind of cute, though.
Have you ever been to Heathrow? Anytime you're at Heathrow in London, there are two porn stars at any given time. If you can find them, you win a free flight anywhere.
They have a store. What? Yeah, there's a porn star store you can go to right at Heathrow.
They have great shopping at Heathrow, I have
They
to
do
say.
Have great shopping at Heathrow.
They do, right, Dean?
They do. They do. It's really more of a shopping center where occasionally planes land.
Right.
So, all right, so listen.
So anyway, that's the...
That's the Love Actually story.
That's the Love Actually story.
Oh, I'm so excited.
And I can't wait for that.
Coming up, Sofia Vergara's embryos. Coming up, The Simpsons and the First Amendment.
This is a great story.
Coming up, Ashton Kutcher winks and blows a kiss to John McCain. What's going on there?
Who says there's not love in Washington?
There is. It's totally love. We'll come back with all of that. Dean standing by at Channel 9. Remember, if you ever have any questions for Dean, text them here and I'll forget to ask. That text number is 312-981-7200.
Here's my personal phone number is 312. What?
I'm going to turn you off before you do that.
You'll be calling his name. Oh, 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 oh. Dean Richer, the entertainment editor, Channel 9-720.
Back to Channel 9. Where do you sit when you talk to us?
What do you mean?
Are you at your desk?
Yeah.
That's where the fancy microphone is?
That's where the fancy hookup microphone is.
So you're like in the corner of the newsroom.
I am in the corner of the newsroom.
And I know you're conveniently located near the world-famous, hilarious Mike Toomey.
Sitting right across from me right now as I speak.
Tell him we're big fans.
Steve Cochran says he's a big fan. He says he's a big fan, too.
And aren't you also near
lying,
Annabelle Laval's desk that she's never at because she's always about town?
Anna's always to my right. She was here yesterday.
Mm. Is it special when she's in?
Because
you guys rarely see
very
her.
Very special and pretty loud.
And and where do you keep Aaron and Demetrius's children? They're in one of the desks as well, aren't they?
They are in the executive offices.
Oh, I see. Okay. All right, fine.
When you're a toddler, you can't sit in the newsroom. The language gets a little salty.
If that were the case, Tomasulo would have been kicked out a long time ago.
Gets a little salty in here sometimes.
Patrick Swayze has been gone for many years. They're going to do an auction of his stuff finally?
Yeah, his wife said she wants to share some of his personal effects with fans. You know, she's just had all the stuff in storage. And it's going up for auction in April. The leather jacket that he wore in Dirty Dancing, which I so see you in.
Yeah, big of a
I see you walking in with that leather jacket, walking up to Andrea and going, nobody puts baby in the corner.
There was a moment yesterday when Trump met the leader of Israel and he said, nobody puts Bibi in the corner.
Yes,
and they recreated
right.
the scene.
Starting bid on the jacket is $4,000. Mm. The surfboard that he
I've got $27.14.
Custom-made surfboard that he used in the movie Point Break.
Oh, that's better for me.
$5,000, starting bid on that. Mm-hmm. I'm going to put a bid in on the maroon silk shirt that he wore in the movie Ghost.
Oh. Mm. Is the wheel or is the kiln?
The pottery wheel?
Right? No, that's not.
Oh.
I guess he didn't personally own that.
Hmm.
But how great would that be if Steve and I made pottery together
right.
on that?
Yeah, shirtless.
That is an image that I just couldn't get out of my head.
Are you sitting on the same stool?
Look at you two.
It would actually take two stools.
I don't know. You guys can work it.
No, it's,
you've worked in closer quarters.
I'm pretty sure what you've described is a two-stool operation.
At least two stools.
You've worked in closer quarters than that.
All right, what's this Simpsons First Amendment story?
So the Tribune McCormick Foundation.
Yeah, I'm familiar with that
work. All organizations. They put out a survey yesterday that said that more people in America know the names of all five of the Simpsons than know the five freedoms guaranteed in the First Amendment.
Oh, so I don't doubt that at
all. Let's have a test. The five Simpsons are...
Homer.
Yes.
Marge.
Marge, Bart.
Yep.
Lisa.
Lisa and Zeppo.
The baby.
Zeppo.
Who has a name.
Maggie.
Maggie is correct.
All right, now name the five freedoms.
Now the five freedoms guaranteed in the First Amendment.
Go ahead, Steve.
Freedom of speech.
Yes.
Freedom to assemble.
Nope. Oh, yes.
Yes.
Yeah.
Freedom to petition.
Yes.
Okay. Yes. Commercial break. Free to be you and me. Wait a minute. Petition, assemble, speech. Freedom to, no, I said petition. Wow, this is embarrassing. I don't know the last
name. It's petition for redress of grievances.
They got it from Festivus.
Yeah.
But the other two that you did not get, freedom of religion.
Religion, of course.
And freedom of press.
Well, you'd think I would have gotten those two.
Get it while you can.
Well, speech. Oh, yeah, it is press.
Yeah, so you fall exactly into...
the idiot category.
The results of this survey, 22% of the Americans could name the Simpsons. 0.1% could name the five freedoms guaranteed in the First Amendment.
Well, what's idiotic is not naming religion or freedom of press. This is press. We
but
are the
you
media.
Knew press. That's
I
a given. Press, That's no a media. Given.
I was so locked into getting petitioned right, I blocked out the two easy ones.
I was
ones.
Shocked that you got petitioned. Petition's the one that almost everybody does not get.
I'm very disappointed in me. Look, the texters are too.
Wait, the president just tweeted, "You need to be kicked out of America."
He's not wrong about that,
but not for this.
Sofia Vergara's embryos, seventh caller, now is a big winner.
So this whole Sofia Vergara embryo story, I thought was settled last December.
So did I. You talked about it here.
She and her ex-fiance have been battling over custody of these frozen embryos that they put in storage
right
when they were going together when they broke up. He wanted to get the embryos and to have them, I don't know what the correct term is, to
propagate
them. Bring them to full term.
Yes.
Make them into children.
Right.
Turn them into children. So that was dismissed by a California court yesterday. The Nick Loeb, the fiance, is still trying to get custody. Going through the state of Louisiana, which is a right to life state, but that's a whole other thing. Yesterday, they went to court. Sofia Vergara is petitioning that nobody can do anything with the embryos without the express written consent of the other
Major League Baseball
person.
It's not the express written consent of Major League Baseball?
That may be another lawsuit, but not involved with this particular one.
So do we know if he is deeply committed to these children to be, or is this just a publicity play?
He's presenting himself as being very right to life, very pro-life.
Okay.
So,
well, he's got an argument.
I don't know if that means that Sofia Vergara wants these embryos destroyed, or she just sounds like. I mean, right now she just wants to keep them frozen, and nobody can do anything without the express written consent of Major League Baseball.
It's funnier when you said it. And Sofia Vergara at this point just continues to yell and screech, get your hands off
right.
my stinking embryos.
These embryos don't know how good they have it right now, not being able to hear anything.
She the highest paid woman in television?
She is.
Yeah, I would think, right?
She is.
Yeah. She does a nice job. I think that show's jumped the shark. It doesn't do it for me anymore.
I agree. I used to love it, but I feel the same way now.
I haven't seen it in a long time, so I guess that means I agree, too.
Yeah. And finally, Ashton Kutcher winked at John McCain and blew him a kiss.
Ashton Kutcher was on Capitol Hill yesterday for a very serious matter. He has been involved for a very long time with the issue of sexual exploitation.
Yeah, and human trafficking.
Human trafficking. He and his ex-wife, Demi Moore, founded an organization called Thorn, trying to prevent all of this, to provide means for which people could expose people who are involved in this. So he very passionately went to Capitol Hill to speak before the Foreign Relations Committee, teared up during the testimony. And so here's a little bit of Ashton Kutcher and a little bit of Senator John McCain, who is the chairman of the committee, responding to Ashton Kutcher.
This is a bipartisan effort. And in a country that is riddled with bipartisan separation on so many things, slavery seems to come up as one of these issues that we can all agree upon. Technology can be used to enable slavery, but it can also be used to disable slavery. And that's what we're doing.
I want to thank Alisa and Ashton. Ashton, you were better looking in the movies.
John McCain kind of hitting on him a little bit.
Yeah.
And then
McCain's
Ashton,
funny.
Ashton blew him a kiss when he said that.
That's very funny. You know, the thing is, and you know this, Dean, but I don't think people realize Ashton Kutcher, who's played mostly goofballs throughout his career, he's actually a very bright guy.
He is.
And he is a technology, he's a tech baron. He has what amounts to a venture capital firm that invests in apps and invests in startups and different things. And he's got a gazillion dollars more than he'll ever make in show business because he was early in on Twitter when it was making money and early in on all of these things. He's a very smart dude.
Yeah, he is. And involved in a lot of really worthwhile charities that benefit him in no way except they're the right thing to do, the nice things to do. I mean, people who say, oh, why don't you celebrities keep your mouth shut and stay out of social issues. There are a lot of celebrities who are really putting their money where their mouth is, doing good things to help people all over the world that you never even hear about. And this is one case where not only Ashton Kutcher, but his ex-wife, Demi Moore, very involved in this issue of human trafficking and going before the subcommittee and being sexually harassed by Senator John McCain and Major League Baseball.
It was a little awkward. Good dude from Iowa. That's Ashton Kutcher.
Yeah.
All right.
And a big Chicago Bears fan, by the way. He's a huge Chicago Bears fan.
That's right. I'd forgotten about
that. Huge Chicago Bears.
Even this year, he's still a fan.
I don't know about this year, but...
Yeah. All right. Tomorrow we talk movies?
I can't wait.
All right. I'm just as excited as you are.
Okay, then. Let's do that.
Nobody right. puts Deanie in the corner.
All right. Let's make it a date then, Pottery Mate.
That's right. Hey, you know what would be cool is if we took the wheel and took it to Pottery Barn. Huh? That's what I'm talking about.
They'd love that, I'm sure.
Back with the big story next. CLTV joins us at 9 on 720 WGN.
Back to the Steve Cochran Show.
The five stages of goodbye. Because in the home visit, if you're leaving the house, there's the goodbye in the kitchen.
Bye-bye.
There's the goodbye by the door where everybody puts their shoes back on.
Bye-bye.
There's the goodbye out in the driveway, and then the goodbye in the car.
It was good seeing you.
And then there's the goodbye as you stand in the way.
Well, see you later.
One more. The people that you forgot to say goodbye to.
That you go back for.
Oh, did you say goodbye to Steven, you know?
Just when I thought I was out. They pull me back in.
There should just be a universal goodbye where you're either if you're at a restaurant
Bye.
Or a house. Exactly.
You love your family, you love your friends. It's just like, okay.
There it is again, the flapping mouth. How odd. I want to see motion, movement. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Take care.
So long, farewell. I'll be just saying adieu.
Adieu, adieu to you and you and you.
Well done. You know, some of the people we may need to say goodbye to are our elected representatives in Springfield. And not some extended goodbye, a much shorter goodbye. We found out from Christine Rodonio, the Senate Republican leader, that, and this is such a perfect microcosm of the massive problem in Springfield. Do you think all the problems are with Trumpville? Uh-uh. The problems in Springfield are epic. And here's your symbolic force of the day. They can't get paper delivered anymore because their vendor hasn't been paid.
Mm-hmm.
So a texter brought this up. I think it's a great idea. If every listener sends them one sheet of paper with a personal message on the other side, then, you know, maybe we get their attention. It's easy to find out who your elected rep is. If you don't know, you just go, who is my Illinois representative? Who is my Illinois state representative? Who is my Illinois state senator? And they will come up. So in my case, It's Stephanie Kifowit in the House and Linda Holmes in the Senate.
Okay.
So I've prepared my one sheets.
Oh, okay. So then they can use the backside of the sheet that you sent,
right.
This paper. Okay.
Now, this highlighter bled through a little bit because I couldn't find a marker.
Okay.
But the ideal thing is they could use the other side for the paper that they need. And this is a huge audience. We send them hundreds of thousands of pages of paper. We could be, you know, giving them enough to do their jobs. And every time they look at the other side, it'll say, do your job, pass a budget. Representative Kifowit, do your job, pass a budget. And Senator Holmes, do your job, pass a budget.
I like how you put it in different colors, too.
Mm. Yeah, it's very artistic.
Very pretty.
Is that now, teal?
I don't know. I'm colorblind. You tell me.
Yeah, I think it
green
is.
Green and blue.
So Representative Kifowit in particular, and I have no axe to grind with her, but she's a Democrat in the House. And a Democrat in the House means what? You answer to?
Mike Madigan.
My close friend, Mike Madigan. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to send this with a little tag on the bottom that says, say hi to Mike Madigan for me, Steve Cochran, WGN. Representative Kifowit, do your job, pass the budget. Senator Holmes, do your job, pass the budget. Here's two sheets of paper. I'm going to send the first two sheets. This is going to cost me almost a dollar in postage. But I'm willing to commit that to the better good of the state so that the poor people in Springfield actually have paper to do their jobs with.
Why don't you fax it? We have a fax upstairs. It's way in the back
sure
of the building.
The fax machine doesn't work
in
Springfield.
It doesn't really work that well.
I don't think the Springfield fax machine works, yeah.
You don't think they'll receive it?
No. Well, I like the idea of them opening mail. I think it gives them something to do while they're not doing their jobs.
I just went to the post office. I bought stamps. You can have a couple stamps.
Oh, for the sake of this?
Yes. Yeah, so
well, can we count on you and your for two sheets for your reps? I don't want you to run out of stamps for your reps.
No, I got plenty of stamps. I bought a whole book.
And good. And you'll send to your rep and your senator?
You can have one. Yeah, Andre? You can have two.
I'm going to have two.
And by the way, you don't have to go with my message in particular, but if you do tag it with Steve Cochran, WGN told me to do this, try not to put too many F-bombs in it. Try not to put any physical threats in it. That wouldn't be helpful.
You know what I'm going to do? I'm going to put the smiley emoji blowing a heart kiss because that'll be symbolic of two things. Hey, you get the paper, and then it's positive. It's a positive, like blowing you a kiss, like sending some good cheer your way to pass a budget.
Yeah, don't put my name on that one either.
Okay.
All right, so who's my Illinois state representatives? It's easy to find out your senator and your House member and send them a note. Do your job. Pass a budget. Make sure you leave the other side blank so they can use it for the paper they don't have. And you can link to their offices and find their address there as well. It is 8:48. Let's take a break. Get to traffic. We'll come back. And I'm going to try something I've never tried on the air before. I'm just going to test my abilities. I'm going to see if I can make a 5-minute discussion on the Federal Reserve interesting enough to keep me from turning the station off. Yeah, right? Let's see if I can pull it off. There's a new book out called Fed Up about the fact that the Fed should just go away. This is the Federal Reserve sets our money policy. So we'll ask important questions like, what is the Fed and why do we need it? And then if I'm still awake, we'll continue the interview. The book's called Fed Up, Danielle DiMartino Booth, an insider's take on why the Federal Reserve is bad for America. Is Danielle on the phone? She's ready to go? All right. Let me grab this right here. Good morning, Danielle. How are you?
Good morning. How are you doing this morning?
I'm doing fine. You have a difficult job. You've got to make us interested enough to understand the Fed and why it should go away, which is the premise of your book. So let's start with the basics. What does the Fed do?
The Fed sets interest rate policy. It sets the price at which you can borrow funds to make purchases. And I don't advocate for ending it, by the way. I do advocate for upending it and completely changing how it operates.
So what is the essential? I don't want to give the book away because I want people to get it and get two copies. You're careless, you'll lose one wherever books are sold. But in getting the book without giving the book away here, what is your essential beef with the Fed? Can you narrow it down to one or two things?
I can. I can narrow it down to one thing. For the past 30-plus years, they have kept interest rates at artificially low levels, and that has encouraged too many Americans, too many American companies, and the U.S. government as well, to spend beyond their means, which ends up creating boom and bust cycles that put the economy on a much weaker footing than what was originally conceived in what we know as capitalism.
Now, this is supposed to be a nonpartisan entity that's only concerned about your nonpartisan money, but the Fed is filled with politics, isn't it?
It's absolutely to the gills filled with politics and politicians. It's part of this is by design because the president appoints the leaders of the Federal Reserve Board in Washington, D.C. And one of the solutions that I have, and it's a lot easier for Congress people to vote in limiting somebody else's terms rather than their own. But one of the things I advocate for is that the terms need to be shortened and limited to 5 years, so that you've got a constant revolving door of new ways of thinking coming in and out of the Fed, as opposed to what you mentioned, ingrained politics.
Danielle, what factors go into whether rates go up and down, and what would be red flags for us as consumers when we hear the news that, oh, Thursday's the day we decide, or whatever day it might be?
And do we pay too much attention to those? Do we in the media over-dramatize those?
Right.
I think we do, But by the same token, we really do have to pay attention to the level of interest rates, because we're approaching $20 trillion of debt on the U.S. government's balance sheet. U.S. households have $18 trillion plus. If you pull up that cute little usdebtclock.org on your screen, and watch your blood pressure when you do. But it's very important to pay attention to the level of interest rates if we are a debtor nation, which we are.
And as long as we are a debtor nation, we're never going to be able to do all the things you'd like to be done in this country. All the greatness of America can't be achieved. The great potential of the American dream can't be achieved. And we do literally pass it on to our kids and our grandkids and so on. That's not hype.
It's the ugliest legacy that we can possibly leave. And it's going to become even more real because the baby boomer generation is no longer some accountant's theory and actuarial prediction, but the baby boomers are actually aging, retiring, and we're going to have to write checks. So entitlement spending is going up in this country, and the chickens are coming home to roost.
Now, we always hear about funny stories, because if you don't laugh, you're going to cry. Is the Fed funny?
No. I'm laughing because you're making me laugh, but no, I certainly would not have taken time away from my four children over the past few years to write this book at tremendous personal risk if I was even remotely amused.
But funny things happen in regards to, there's anecdotes, right? The book has anecdotes that could actually make me laugh and make me want to read the rest of it.
Take the writing of the Fed statement. There's a hilarious section of the book that lasts for like three pages, where people at the Fed, they're sitting at the Federal Open Market Committee around a huge table spending taxpayers' money debating whether or not they're going to use one word or another word or another word, and how the markets are going to perceive it. And if it wasn't in the transcripts and if it wasn't actually real, you would have to say to yourself, are you serious? This is what they're spending their time doing?
So you mentioned risk. There is risk because you've built a career and a reputation that is dependent on, your reputation. Did you take some flack for writing this book?
Well, it's only been out since Tuesday, so let me get back to you on that. But yes,
people knew you were writing it.
Tremendous amounts of criticism for doing this. If you look at Timothy Geithner or Ben Bernanke, Timothy Geithner wrote Stress Test. Ben Bernanke wrote The Courage to Act. You know what? That was what really threw me over the edge, because I think that had Ben Bernanke had the courage to not act and to sit and wait and see what monetary policy did over the long term, as opposed to continually trying to give the patient more and more heroin of unconventional monetary policy, lower interest rates, quantitative easing, you name it, I think that I wouldn't have been as irritated as I was and compelled to write this book. But yes, tremendous personal risk, but somebody has to tell the truth and tell the story, and that's what I've done.
An insider's take on why the Federal Reserve is bad for America. It's called Fed Up. It's Danielle DiMartino Booth. I'm not kidding. Get two copies. You're careless. You'll lose one. Download one, buy the hard copy, and you got a backup.
I recorded the audiobook myself.
And there you go. Thanks for coming on. I appreciate it, and thanks for a little bit of an education on something we hear about constantly, but rarely dive into. We'll come back with the news next and join CLTV as they join us on 720 WGN. Thanks for coming on. I appreciate it, and thanks for a little bit of an education on something we hear about constantly, but rarely dive into. We'll come back with the news next and join CLTV as they join us on 720 WGN.
This is 720 WGN Chicago.
Troy Murray here. For nearly 120 years, Chicago's own Nuveen has worked to live up to the highest standards of investment excellence, committed to delivering lasting value, whatever the markets may bring. Like generations of Chicagoans, they've watched our Blackhawks strive for excellence, whatever the season may bring. At Nuveen, they couldn't be more proud to support our champion Blackhawks as they work to keep Chicago the home of hockey excellence and bring the cup back to our city in 2017. Visit Nuveen.com today.
My name is Anita, and I'm a former frowner. When my daughter got married, I was afraid to smile in our family photos. I was embarrassed by my bad teeth. So I got dental implants from Eon Clinics. I just called 844-365-SMILE, and their board-certified specialists gave me the confidence to smile and improve my health. Plus, Eon Clinics' cutting-edge technology is all under one roof. If you're like I was, call 844-365-SMILE and start smiling today.
I just asked Dave Ennett if he could do something for me after the show. He said, and I quote, "I can't. I have a yogurt I have to finish by 10:30.
By 10:10, I think
he said.
Oh, you said 10:10?
Okay. Yeah. It's got an expiration.
Back to the Steve Cochran Show.
What a chance there to the back. Of the shot. They battle in the corner. It's finessed by Keith around for a feed in front.
There has not been an important National Hockey League game, I mean a really important National Hockey League game, in the last, who knows what, how many years, that Doc Emmerich hasn't done. He's the guy. He's your go-to guy.
No question.
He's the man. And he's good enough to join us as hockey gets restarted after this odd midwinter break. Good morning, Doc. How are you, my friend?
It's great to talk to you guys again, and I'm happy that even though the Cats lost last night, that there's talk of a tournament this year.
Yeah, now, Dave, take us through that, because I think Doc would have the same question that I would have. They've got Rutgers, and then they've got Illinois. If they beat Rutgers and Illinois, and they should, are they in pretty good shape?
I mean, I think they're in pretty good shape now, Steve and Doc. I just think that you have to be, as somebody within the program said to me the other day, until you get to a point where you can lose, you don't have to worry about losing whatever games are ahead of you, and you know you're still in, then until then, you're not, it's not done.
Right.
But I think they're in very good shape, and it's very exciting, and they've played really well, and you know, they had a rough one last night against a very good Maryland team, but they'll bounce back.
You agree with that, Doc? Because if you don't, we'll have Dave thrown out of the building.
Well, it's like we learned in the last 10 minutes or so. It's the selection committee is like the Federal Reserve. It's highly political.
See, there you go. Fantastic.
Very true.
Doc, I took on a challenge there to try to make the Fed topic interesting enough to keep me awake. It worked for me. Do you feel we lost any listeners?
I don't think so. I stayed with you through it all. As a matter of fact, I remember the sixth grade civics, it was called, and the way to remember the top five for the First Amendment was RASPY, religion, assembly, press, speech, I got them out of order, and then petition. And you guys did really well on that.
Yeah, I can't believe I won the religion and the I've lost on the easy ones. All right, so hockey's back. What game are you doing this weekend?
I have Hockey Day in America, which will be four games, including the Blackhawks playing in Buffalo on Sunday evening, but we have four games all day. It's one day a year on a Sunday that's devoted to that. We start out with Washington and the Rangers, and then I'm in Pittsburgh for the Detroit Red Wings, and then Chicago Buffalo is on NBCSN later, and then we finish the day with the Boston Bruins out in San Jose. So we have an original 16 in all four of the matchups that
cool.
day. It's pretty exciting, and there are an awful lot of stories told about American-born players or coaches or just hockey in America. So it's a fun day for all of us, more to sit and watch what goes on in the intermissions as much as to what goes on the ice.
You know, as hockey comes back from this weird week, the scheduling thing is complex, and I don't envy the people that have to do it. But we're going to get into the stretch run here, and we rarely talk about the East Conference, the Eastern Conference here. Who are the powerhouses? We know Boston had a coaching change. We know Montreal had a coaching change. We know Washington's running away with it. But who else do we have to be concerned with in the East?
I think you mentioned the key team. If they can get through Pittsburgh, then Washington is your odds-on favorite, I think, based on the regular season. It's always a dangerous thing to do. They kept most of their team together. They're fewest goals against in the league. They're near the top in goals for. Their special teams are the best. And they seem primed this year to have learned again from what happened against Pittsburgh in the second round last year. But if you take the Metropolitan, you have to think that Pittsburgh and the Rangers and Columbus, the dark horse of Washington. But the team that I'm most focused on, I think, is Washington. I think this is really their year to do it.
Yeah, they've been unbelievable. Their run of games, high-scoring games, they've outscored their opponents by 71 goals on the season. But then you look at the West and you see the Minnesota Wild, the team the Blackhawks are chasing and a team the Blackhawks are going to see, I believe, coming week when they come out of this break. They're going to play on Tuesday night at Minnesota, and they just won up their a couple of weeks ago. But boy, Minnesota, Doc, has been amazing ever since right around the 1st of December.
Yeah, they made a coaching change over the summer, and Bruce Boudreau, who had been in Anaheim, I think he and Claude Julien combined were out of work for a total of 8 days. That's the two guys combined, because Julien was fired in Boston right away, taken to Montreal, and Bruce was fired off in the seventh game loss out in Anaheim, another seventh game loss, and wound up in Minnesota. They've been really good, but when you consider that Dave scored the goal in overtime a week ago Wednesday in Minnesota, and that got the Blackhawks to within five, and then they went on and won two more games, and so did the Wild, and you think, okay, so it's a five-point deficit. Now we're going on vacation for 5 days. What will it be when we come back? Well, Minnesota plays Dallas tonight. The deficit is still five. And after tonight, they are even in games remaining. Both have 25 to go. So despite being out of action, because they had such a tremendous road trip, they won five straight, five of the six that they played on the road. They're still in a great position. And beneath them, 10 points to St. Louis in third place. They're in a position where they can experiment. They got Roosevelt back off the IR, so they're fairly healthy. They can experiment with line combinations if they feel like they want to. They can do something between now and the trade deadline if they can find room on the salary cap and they feel like they want to. They're in a position that I know Coach Q would not want to be heard as comfortable, but it's better than most teams have in this league right now.
Doc, I know you get uncomfortable when you get the pad on the back, but you really made the day last week of a young man named Evan Pivnik when you called the Bowling Green game with him. The reviews are in. He said, it was great to work with the preeminent American hockey announcer of this century. Unbelievable, really fun, and cool.
Doc, it was a lot of fun.
Doc is cool.
He said it was the best day of his life.
You go back to your old roots at Bowling Green in the same old rink, and you're at the top row like you were as a grad student 44 years ago when you were just hoping to get into this as a career. Evan was terrific. He did the first and third, and just like when in my college days, I got to do the second period. So I left Bowling Green after 2 years with 40 periods of experience. And my first, so it was okay.
Before
I wish they would have offered me two tickets on Andrea's next trip to Athens. I would like gone.
You're going to be my guest. Next trip, Doc, okay. You and me.
Because Doc is such a good fan of WGN, here's what we're going to do. The seventh caller who calls 312-981-7200 gets their pick of anything on the prize list in honor of Doc, because Doc knows everything that went on the show today.
He's the best.
And every day. All right, Doc, before we let you go, how are the dogs?
The dogs are great. And so far, the vet bills are down, so that's a good sign.
Good.
And the last we heard from the horses, my wife just loves horses. And when I left home, we had six. So I'm hoping when I get back home, it's still six. But it's a joyous existence, and I count myself very blessed.
And my appearance today was with the express written consent of Major League.
That may have been a highlight of the day outside of talking to you. I do think MLB needs to clear everything. It's a great Doc Emrick. See him on Hockey Day and Night in America on Sunday, and the Blackhawks get ready for the stretch run. So we'll see you at the Madhouse. Thank you, my friend.
Best of that granddaughter of yours.
All right, you got it. There you go. I'm sending pictures all the time of Abigail Grace. So,
and I'm sure he appreciates that.
Well, listen, yesterday I did an appearance at a high school.
Oh, yeah, radio station. By the way.
It was good, but all the kids wanted to see pictures of Abigail Grace.
Is that true?
Well, I said, do you want to see pictures of Abigail Grace? And I said, if you do, I'll show them to you as I was taking my phone out and showing them pictures of Abigail Grace. It's 9:22. Back after this on 720 WGN.
Back to the Steve Cochran Show. Well, I got me a fine wife. I got me old fiddle. When the sun's coming up, I got cakes on a griddle. Life ain't nothing but a funny, funny riddle.
Thank God I'm a country boy. Woo-hoo! 9:27, as usual. The only source of true stability in America, the American farmer. As you look towards Washington, O., and the government, as we know it, is careening downhill like a truck without brakes. I know that on farms from sea to shining sea, a farmer is doing his best to make sure we have food on the table tonight and tomorrow night.
And I can assure you that barring total annihilation because of weather, that will be accomplished, and you and I will walk into supermarkets with shelves overflowing with food thanks to the American farmer.
Yeah, and maybe that's the key. I spent a lot of time on farms when I was a kid. Oh, grew up on farms. I probably need to get back to my roots. I probably need to go to farms where farmers and work farms, because farmers are too busy to get caught up in the 24-hour news cycle and everything else that's going on with all the stress that's caused by what's happening in Springfield and Washington.
But I have to tell you, Steve, you would not recognize the farm today if you compare it to what you were on. As a matter of fact, Max is at the National Farm Machinery Show in Louisville, and I can't believe some of the technology that we're working on. For example, there's a company now that has mapped 65 million acres of farmland in the United States. And thanks to the radar sensing and all of the ability to look at fields from the sky, every day they can provide a farmer who subscribes to the service how much moisture there is in the soil. They can let them know if they have a disease problem. They can let them know if they have an insect problem. They can let them know if there's not enough nitrogen fertilizer to make a kernel of corn on that field. And that information comes to the computer on the farm every day. It's refreshed that often. I mean, I find it just absolutely amazing when I compare what it's like today and what it was like when I was growing up on the dairy farm. There is no comparison, really.
And you've told me before that drones do a lot of the work in the fields to check out the crops as they're growing, make sure that the big expensive equipment isn't going to run over something that's been inadvertently left in the field, or storm damage and things of that nature. But the mapping, is that all done by satellite?
Done by satellite. And as I say, this one company, and it's one of several that are in the business, has 65 million acres. So a farmer can get up in the morning and say, I wonder what's happening in that field about a mile from the house, and just pull it up on the computer. Amazing. It really is. And that's the technology that Max and the manufacturers are looking at the Louisville Farm Equipment Show and the Tulare World Ag Expo in Tulare, California. Both of those shows are on this week, and it really is quite an accomplishment. And I just finished a visit with a specialist in soybean and corn production in South America. And their soil and climate, very similar to what we have in North America. But he said something to me that just astounded me. There is a state in Brazil that we talk about, Mato Grosso. It's the main producing state in that country. It produces as much soybeans every year as the states of Illinois, Iowa, and half of Indiana. And that's in South America.
You know, as we go forward and the stress of whatever happens in Washington gets worse, How would that affect food prices, if at all?
I'm not sure it'll affect food prices. As a matter of fact, it may bring them down, because if we lose markets, and interestingly enough, right now, you know, because we could have problems with Mexico. Mexico imports a lot of our beef and a lot of our pork. And so the gentleman I was talking to a few minutes ago, who has lived in Brazil, said that Brazil and Argentina are major meat producers, and they're already sending their phytosanitary people to Mexico to get clearance so that they can ship more pork and beef and poultry into the country of Mexico. So the political maneuverings in Washington definitely can have an impact on farm prices. And if they were to cause the loss of some markets, that means we would have more here. Prices would come down, but would come down for farmers as well and put a lot of them out of business. Because we're down 50% in corn and soybean prices from where we were 4 years ago. So just imagine if you have a salary and it's been cut 50% in 4 years, that changes things for your outlook.
And with the continued no-budget status of Illinois, how does that affect farmers?
Well, not a great deal other than the tax situation and the infrastructure, you know, that we need. And so it impacts everybody. It impacts rural schools. It impacts rural high schools. It impacts getting rural broadband to people who need it. And so, yeah, that it's a continuing drag on all of us, but farmers certainly feel it too.
Well, downstate too, there are thousands of bridges in the Midwest that need to be repaired. And my concern is that nobody's going to do a thing about it until a school bus ends up in a river. You know, going over one of these bridges, or, you know, a piece of farm equipment, or a car with a family in it.
Yeah. And it is a serious problem, because they started out as farm-to-market roads built mainly to get products from the farm to the elevator to the packing plant. And with the bridge deterioration that we're seeing, not just in Illinois but throughout the Midwest and on the river system, the Mississippi and the Illinois has been going downhill for the last 40 years, and we're not spending money to fix that. And so while they open up a new expanded version of the Panama Canal, and they did that in about 6 years, we've been talking for 40 years and have done nothing with the waterway system. So we've got to soon quit talking and start doing.
I'll let you go on this. Did you see the story? There was a drug-slinging catapult attached to part of the existing border fence in Mexico.
No, I heard you talking about it. I'm not surprised, because I have visited ranchers on the border between Arizona and Mexico. You can't imagine what they go through every night with people coming across the border into their farmland. They're disrupting the cattle that are on the ranch. It's a major problem if you live on the border between Mexico and the United States.
It's Orion Samuelson. Thanks for the education, as always. Please say hi to Gloria.
Will do. I'll see her tonight in Arizona.
Excellent. Good problem for you to have. Yeah. That's Big O. Back with a big story next on 7. Or no, what am I saying? Yeah, back with a big story next.
This is the Steve Cochran Show on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
947, make it 948. Bill Geiger's here. We'll get to him in just a second. I just want to show you these one more time. Earlier this morning, Christine Redonia was on the Senate Republican leader, and she explained that the Senate is out of money for paper, and the House is out of money for paper, and Illinois is out of money for paper. They don't have paper. They don't have paper. The paper vendor hasn't been paid. The paper vendor's not dropping money off. So my thought is we do a paper drive. A paper drive for the elected reps who can't get a budget together.
It's a great idea.
So on one side of the paper drive, I want you to write your representative's name and then any sort of caption that sort of sums up what we're looking for. This is what I've done. My House rep is Representative Kifowit, and this says, do your job, pass a budget.
Mm-hmm.
And my Senate rep is Linda Holmes, which also says, do your job, pass a budget. I don't know if you can pick it out. The lighting's a little funky.
And the, and it's colored, too. It's green and blue, so it's colorful.
Right. Now, if you're going to do this and you put 720 WGN on here, try not to put too many F-bombs on or other things, but you can certainly tell them we sent you. And then the other side is conveniently empty so they can actually use this for the paper they don't have.
There you go.
So we're helping and we're sending a message.
It's a win-win.
Any questions?
Is it green? That's the only thing.
Is what green?
Using all this paper.
Hey, they don't have paper.
I know they don't have paper.
Well, we're
sending them paper.
Can you imagine if not having paper is the latest excuse for not getting a budget together?
And plus, I like that.
Plus, how are you going to print the budget once you have it done?
I like that it's green because they're not used to seeing green.
Exactly. Yeah, everything they had there was red. Bill Geiger is here to try to figure out retirement. This mess in the state for people in their 50s and 60s, is it driving retirees out of the state?
It's driving retirees out of the state. It's driving people crazy, wondering whether their pensions are going to be around.
Right. So that's got to be a major area of stress when people come and sit down and talk to you, isn't it?
It is. You know, people work their entire life, and they're in the late 50s, early 60s, and they're unsure about how their retirement's going to plan out.
Right. So what Bill Geiger does, he'll sit down with you, and he'll assess the amount of risk you have in your portfolio now. But also talk about the big picture stuff. Talk about what you want to do, right?
Yeah, what you want to do and how you're going to do it, how you're going to pay for it.
So if you're a successful individual or couples, which is most couples in most cases in your 50s and 60s,
right?
You have an opportunity to meet with you and also meet with your staff, depending right. on how things go, and work to make your money work harder so those unemployment years that you taught me about,
yeah.
the best unemployment true. Years of your life, you know, I've been unemployed a lot. They weren't all that fun. But the unemployment years will be funded.
Well, like we said, the retirement's like 30 years of unemployment. Right?
Right.
So how do you replace those paychecks? And that's a big, big deal that people should be planning for if they're in their late 50s, early 60s. How am I going to replace that paycheck?
It's Geiger Wealth Management, by the way, and we'll tell you more about how you can get an assessment of your situation and a full-blown financial workup here in a couple of minutes. Before we do that, though, how do people know when they need to retire?
Well, basically,
or can, I guess, retire.
You know, the conventional wisdom is when you have enough money, but who knows how much that is.
Yeah, what's enough?
Yeah, I've never seen anybody in over 30 years of doing this that had enough. If it's $1 million, they'd really like to have two. If it's $5 million, they'd really like to have 10.
Right.
So you can never quite have enough, but what you need enough of is a sustainable income. When you retire, you've got bills coming in and you have money coming in at the same time. If the bills are greater than the income coming in, which is for most retirees, how do you structure your retirement so you can create sustainable income to meet those bills and sleep at night?
And that's part of what the sit-down is all about right. when you get together with people.
It's a big part of it.
But what about conflicting views? You might have a husband that comes in that goes, well, I'm a high risk, she's a low risk, or vice versa.
Normally the...
I mean, do you try to talk them into a joint vision?
Yes, I do.
Yeah.
Let me tell you the funniest disconnect is I ask couples, how much does your lifestyle cost? And the man will say, well, maybe $3,000 a month, $4,000 a month. And I can see out of the side of my eye that the wife is just shaking her head no, that he has no clue.
No, he has no clue.
Right. It's right. usually much higher than what the guy thinks.
Right. Is there a percentage of the income you retire from that normally falls into place? Like, do people generally need 80% of what they're making, or does it vary?
No, that's a part of the conventional wisdom, too, that's not true. People feel like it when they retire, because they're not going to dry clean as many ties, that their retirement's going to be less expensive than their living expenses while they're working. But that's not true, because people travel. They spend money on traveling, they spend money on grandkids, they spend money on paying for weddings, and you really should plan for having as much income when you retire as before you retire.
Yeah, so it depends on what you want to do. Again, that's yeah. what it comes down to when you sit down with you and talk it over. The markets go up, the markets go down. Before we run out of time, we know the markets will go down. Absolutely. So even though we're in a Trump bubble, it's the one piece of sustainable the sustainable good news about this presidency is that the markets seem to like it. But we know it's going to go in the other direction at some point.
At some point. The problem is we don't know when. And if you're in your 30s, you can kind of throw that to the side and say, I'm not going to worry about it. But if you're in your late 50s to early 60s, if you have a big downturn now, that's going to affect the rest of your life. So a couple of things that have to come into play when you get to that age and you start planning is, one, where's my income going to come from? And two, how am I going to make sure that I don't have a big loss at this stage of my life?
Yeah, because that setback, you're not at a point where you can recover.
Oh, you're going to be greeting people at Walmart.
Now, Andrea is 27. Yes. Should she be saving for retirement now?
Absolutely.
Okay, but let me ask you this. So I am saving, and I'm trying to max out my 401k, but that doesn't mean that you should stop living, right? Like if you want to take a trip.
You should never leave your house.
Or does it? I mean, should you,
well, what you do
watch
is
how you spend?
Pay yourself first. Uh-huh. Have deducted from your paycheck, not just your 401k, but a few bucks going to a mutual fund firm.
Okay.
And do that before you even say your check. And then when, with your check, have at it.
It makes sense, right?
That Steve, can sense. I borrow $16,000?
Sure.
All right, cool.
Yeah. Mm, that's fine. Yeah, it's in my wallet. Just grab it. That's why I can't sit on
you
it.
Want to go with? We'll go somewhere.
It's Bill Geiger. We're going to run out of time here. You and I will talk more, and there's going to be a new podcast up where people can get more information as well. But we know nothing could be more frustrating than working hard your entire life, saving as much as possible for retirement, trying to make your nest egg last 20 or 30 years we're talking about. So Geiger Wealth Management's got something special for you. People sit down with you, right?
Yes, they do.
All right, so $500,000 or more in your successful life should mean that you're in pretty good shape. But how much risk is in there? You need the professional, the retirement guru, to go ahead and assess this, to run it through your fancy retirement machine, and to really get a sense of what's there and what isn't.
I like that retirement guru part.
I know you do. On my business card. You are. You're the guru. And the thing is, once you sit down and you get this full-blown financial workup, which could cost you $3,000 if you were paying for it, you're going to get it for free, and then these customers can decide if you guys are going to work together.
Absolutely.
All right. It's Geiger Wealth Management. Next five callers who have saved that $500,000 or more for retirement and want this free financial workup in a meeting with Bill, 800-681-2498. Together with you, Bill's going to translate the complex financial process in easy to understand steps. It's Geiger Wealth Management. Don't miss out on this offer. 800-681-2498, 800-681-2498.